We're gonna start the meeting. Welcome. The first item on the agenda is approval of the agenda that we have at this time. Government bodies always approve the agenda in advance. So may I have a motion to approve the agenda?
Sorry.
I'll second it. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, next we have the meeting minutes of the June 11th meeting for your information. That looks like that does not need to be approved. There's nobody present for public comment, so we can skip that one.
No, Suzanne, if you want to say.
Is you're here?
No.
You don't have any comments?
Just hello.
Nice to see everyone.
She's from Mizell.
I'm from Mizell.
Welcome.
Thank you. I'm the Director of Falls Prevention.
Doesn't matter.
So thank you for everything you guys have done over the last 4 years.
Yeah, we'll hear about it.
Director of?
Mizell.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mizell. Director of Falls Prevention.
Oh, great.
Falls Prevention Program.
Yes.
Thank you. Great. So right now, next on the agenda is grant proposals under development. That's for information in your packet. Did anybody have any questions of Donna about what's under development? Ms. Brandel?
The updates are in red.
I'm sorry?
The updates are in red.
Okay.
Except for the blue with the blind doctors.
New business, as interview, consider volunteer community member to be included on the alternate list, and that's candidate Christine Anderson. Welcome, Christine. Glad to be here.
Thanks.
Christine, could you start by giving us like a 2-minute rundown of your background?
Sure. Let's see. I was originally a speech pathologist. Have worked in schools, and I worked in Santa Ana Unified School District, and there moved on from speech pathology to being a principal. So I was largely a school principal for nearly 20 years in a very poor community. That's kind of always been my focus, is working with kids and communities in need. I was also a program specialist for Orange County Department of Education for 9 years, and that is, you're working with curriculum and instruction and training people and those kinds of things. And mostly in those days, it was always all in language development and so on, because my background was speech pathology. So to kind of connect it to what we do here, when I was a principal, I was a principal of this great little school called Carl Harvey School, and it was a school originally for kids with physical disabilities. And so we had a medical therapy unit on site, and when we transitioned, we kept the medical therapy unit and we integrated all our kids with physical and mental disabilities, then it was called, into regular classrooms. So that was probably nearly 30 years ago now. And it was very exciting, it was very innovative, and really fun. So we had medical therapy clinics there, a lot of occupational physical therapists, speech pathologists, and I was the principal, and ran a lot of the IEP meetings as well as the general school population. And when we did that, we decided to focus on just reaching out into the community and getting our kids into school earlier. I started writing grants. So there were probably 10 or 12 years of grant writing, which the biggest one for here would probably be the Early Start grant. So I got kids into school starting at 2 and 3 years of age with their parents. And it was wonderful and amazing, and I learned a lot. And then we started the big 21st Century After School Programs. It was a federal grant to get the school day expanded, because you can't expect kids in need to just be able to get everything right away. We've got to have more time, for God's sake. So we kept kids at probably about 60-70% of our students stayed till 5 o'clock every night. And so the after school program was health and wellness, food. We fed kids breakfast, lunch, and then dinner, the after school program.
Wow.
and the arts. So it was wonderful, and physical activities. So then I got my EDD and went into upper administration, did human resources for a while in the school district, and then I got the job out in Palm Springs as the assistant superintendent of instruction. So I oversaw the academic programs and all of the other things. And again, related to this area, what we didn't have was a real health and wellness coordinator in Palm Springs Unified. There was a school food manager. And so we hired a more health and wellness person. Some of you may remember her, Wanda. Mm-hmm. And she was the one who really, after talking about what our kids needed, began to focus on writing some grants, and she came to the healthcare district. And it was the first time I knew about it, that it even existed. And so I think we had a couple of unsuccessful grant writing experiences. You know, we didn't get funded, that's okay. And then we did get funded through the healthcare district for a childhood obesity grant and a
breakfast in the classroom.
Breakfast in the classroom, yeah, exactly.
Universal lunch.
Yeah, universal. It was wonderful. And then we went to a universal food program. We really expanded the health and wellness, mostly around food issues in the district. And then we kind of moved on also to the physical aspect. So we started something called Game On in elementary schools. I don't know if any of you are familiar with the foundation in Palm Springs Unified, but Ellen Goodman is the director. And she started Game On, which is really Playworks. And so 12 of the elementary schools have structured play and interaction, which is another whole part of health and wellness for kids. So as you can see, I've kind of been into, it's really around kids and families more than it has been health and wellness for the greater say, retired community or regular community. And that, I've gone on way more than 2 minutes. So that's probably it. Then I became the superintendent of schools about 5 years after I was assistant sup. It was great working with the board, and that's when I was invited to be on the tenant board for the hospital. And I had my, I learned a lot. More than I gave, I learned. And so all the health issues there were bigger things, like the same things you have in a big school district, hiring. Really getting quality people makes a quality program for the hospital and for the whole community. I saw the need for healthcare people, professionals in the community. So that was a big thing.
You were one of the first champions of the Alliance for Healthier Generation. That 4-year project that
That's
we did
right.
with the Clinton Foundation.
Clinton Foundation. American Heart Association. Really active with the Clinton Foundation.
And you were the first superintendent that came on. You convinced the other two superintendents to
do it.
To
You're
do
right.
it.
I've kind of forgotten all about that.
And we, to this day, we have 4 years of baseline information on the health and school program.
I know, it's really wonderful. So I've had a lot of experience with programs and a lot of interest long-term in health and wellness. And mostly with children and families, but I think it's broadened now. So that's
You're probably a champion of the Cielo Vista Charter. You're a champion of the Cielo Vista Charter School too.
Yeah. Started that.
I love that school.
Yeah.
They are so
good. Yeah, a lot of really fun things in the school district. I had just a fabulous experience there for 2 years. Yeah, we did a lot of really
That's great.
Stuff.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Christine. Does anybody else have questions for Christine?
Anybody else have questions for Christine?
Yeah, well, as a alternate board member, I hope you consider yourself as a real board member and participate fully.
Thank you.
Committee member.
I'm sorry, committee. Thank you. Committee member.
Committee member. I was going to say, I don't think it's plural.
Committee member. Well, I would say that the advisory committees are always training boards in the spring for people to, move on and move up to district responsibilities. So that would be great. Does anybody, I said nobody had any other questions. Staff, are you okay? Any more questions? Okay.
I didn't hear very well. What district did you work for?
Palm Springs Unified.
Okay.
So we covered Desert Hot Springs, Palm Springs, Cathedral City.
And can you elaborate a little more on the foundation experience you had within that district?
Sure. The foundation, well, let's see. When I came in, we didn't have a foundation. So superintendent right before me, Lori McCune, Dr. McCune, some of you may have met her, she said, oh my goodness, there's no foundation. How are we going to reach out to our community? How are we going to raise funds? So she got the idea going, and then we developed it from there. I was lucky enough to be able to hire a very experienced CEO. I mean, she's our director, Ellen, who came from the Bay Area. She worked at Variety and a number of big places, and we were able to put a kind of a different foundation structure together in which the district actually and the board agreed and supported this, agreed to support it financially. So they basically put in about $250,000 a year in seeding money to pay our director and our clerical staff and to get some program scope. And that's what we did, and to develop our focus, and it has blossomed into a wonderful organization with a lot of, probably now close to 8 to 10 areas of focus. Did I get to?
Yeah. You are retired now, right?
I am retired.
Okay,
I retired
so you don't have any ties with that foundation anymore?
No, none. And on purpose. You know, when you leave as the superintendent, you don't go back into your same district. Sandy Lyon is a fabulous superintendent, and she's been there now, I think, 3 years. And no, it's, you know, a little awkward. I went to COD. I did join, I was asked, and that was the one that resonated with me. I finished at the hospital. I'm off the hospital board. I finished my 6 years, 2-3 year terms in January. And I joined the COD, College of the Desert Foundation, about a year ago now.
Okay, so you have some extensive experience with foundations.
Yes.
So is it safe to say that you have experience in analyzing grants that
yes.
come your way?
Yes.
Okay, very good.
Yeah, I wrote grants as a principal and as an assistant superintendent. I wrote them, I was never the one who did the heavy data analysis, but I absolutely, I set up systems so grants were analyzed, you know, because you can't just approve them and then ignore them. You've got to ask for your data and see where it's going. And yes, I feel very comfortable with grants and analyzing. Thank you for that.
Very good. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Yes, there, Chair. Mm-hmm. So I heard alternate volunteer member. Mm-hmm. What is?
Well, the board only authorized 5 members on this committee.
So we currently have 5, and so there was interest in.
Right. No interest. Okay.
So we created an alternate.
And Chris called me and explained that, you know, you were full, and I said, well, then that's fine. But he said, no,
we want you to participate.
As an to participate, be an alternate. And I said, that would be lovely.
Great.
Any way I can serve.
Could I have a motion to approve Christine as an alternate member? Is there a second? Great. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you, everyone. I look forward to serving.
Super.
Great.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes. Can I keep the binders?
You're welcome to stay if you'd like for the orientation.
Well, I think if you can.
I can.
You're
great.
Welcome to if you'd like.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Still, they offer the lunch.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Maybe I will if I'm missing.
Great. Well, next, Chris was going to start orientation of the volunteer community members.
Okay. Appreciate you all being here today, and it was evident at the last committee meeting, you know, that it's going to be beneficial to do an orientation with the committee members, so that there's just a little better understanding of what the district's intent is with committee members on the different committees. So, program committee did have volunteer community members previously. I think we had a year little break and then restarted that. Finance committee has had some volunteer community members on for the last 3 or 4 years. That has kind of dwindled as far as those original people that were on that, but we are in process of doing the same advertising and interview process that we did with you folks for this committee. So,
can I interrupt a second?
Sure.
And say that the reason why the program committee was reinstated, reformulated, is that because they wanted the program and the grants to come to the board of directors. They wanted it more fully vetted, more analyzed, and that's why it's so valuable to have community members on our board, on our committee. So that's the reason why it was reformulated.
Yeah. And the purpose with it is, the committees now regarding the number of directors from our board, since we have a seven-member board now, there are three directors that are on each committee. Director Pilar is unable to be with us today. We have Director Brezgill and Chairperson Rogers. But like Carol was saying, reinstated the program committee to allow opportunity to vet each of the grants and any programs or anything that the district is working with. So then it comes to the board in kind of a cleaner process to the board, so it's already been vetted, engaged with community members involved, and getting the input from the community that the district would like to have. So with that, we sent out a package, after our last committee meeting, and hopefully you've had opportunity to look through it. And so forgive me if I'm repeating things that you've already read and understood, but just would like to highlight some areas. And so in the packet, page 20, which is of the board of directors, policy number 3, appointment duties for committees. Just want to acknowledge that in 2.1, that the members serve one three-year term. And there are some other requirements there. If you happen to be involved with a particular grantee, there's some stipulations there whether you can serve on the committee or not. We just wanted to avoid any conflict associated with our grant processes. Want to point out 2.3, the meetings and voting. Volunteer members shall participate in the committee process, including participating in voting at the committee meetings and making recommendations to the full board. However, the votes and recommendations of volunteer members, while noted in the record, shall be advisory in nature only. So your input and recommendations are taken and heard, but ultimately whatever the recommendation that comes from our board members is ultimately the recommendation that would go before the board. Item 2.4, conflicts of interest. Again, we'd like to make sure that we have community members that don't have a particular conflict, that there's not a certain agenda item that a committee member would be promoting a grantee that they may work for, or some other conflict that would be compromising, in a sense, a decision that would be made by the full board. Item 3, the purpose of the program committee is to, in accordance with the district commission's strategic plan, grant program provides funds to nonprofit and governmental organizations, again, that impact community health and improve access to health care in line with the district's strategic plan. And then below that, 3.1, I won't go through all of them, but the responsibilities of the program committee are pretty important responsibilities. So we're, with this committee, we're making decisions on how community resident member taxpayer dollars are being allocated and spent in the community with regard to resident health, access to resident health care. On page 23, item 7.
I have a question.
Sure.
On the program committee, when we were discussing that earlier, the purpose of it, mm-hmm. one thing that stuck out for me was our purpose to be on the program committee is to act as an oversight group, reviewing recommendations with staff and all that, which I think is great, really great. That's why I was asking my question to,
Chris.
Just how much experience she has and with grants and the whole process. But the question I have is in the program committee where it states in the first paragraph, number 3, that this committee recommends policy to the board?
Grant-making policy.
Say that again?
Grant-making policy.
Okay, very good. That's clear.
So that's the purpose of the program committee, is anything grant making or program kind of related. So
okay.
If there's projects or things that we may be working on at some point. Like one of the things we have going right now is a Ready, Set, Swim program. So those kinds of things would be initially brought before the program committee, discussed if there's viability to it, that it makes sense then to bring it, recommend it to the full board for consideration and approval, then that comes from this committee.
Okay, thank you for clarifying that for me. The other thing is that it also states that besides the grant function policies, we will also be responsible for program related activities. What does that mean? Can you give me some examples?
Like I just mentioned, our Ready, Set, Swim program, which is a program that's been in effect for about 5 years now. It was initially a collective fund that was initiated with some funds coming from the Palm Springs Mayor's Race, combined with district funds. And it's a program that works with third graders in the Palm Springs Unified School District and provides swimming instruction to third graders, and that's also combined with a separate program that's funded by the county called NEOP, which is Nutrition Education and Obesity. And so those two programs combined is providing exercise and healthy living to third graders that they can learn swim techniques and also healthy eating ideas that they can develop themselves and also take into their families. You should be eating apples or carrots instead of candy bars and things like that. So,
okay, I don't want to sound like a stickler, but since I'm new on the committee, I have questions and I want clarifications.
No problem.
Sure.
Thank you.
We welcome them.
Absolutely.
I think the key word there is desire and impact. And we always want to make sure that our programs fulfill their goals and that they have measurable outcomes. So that, I think that that's what's important. And we do get reports, progress reports from our grantees so that we can see how they're doing.
Well, since you brought it up, that's another one of my questions. It's measurable outcomes. How do you read them? Based on what? On what they say in the grant, what they're gonna do.
Exactly.
Okay, so you read them, you do a report to the committee, yes, no, They're up to compliance, correct?
Yes, so we get periodic reports from the grantees based on the deliverables that are identified up front in the grant, and then progress is reported on those deliverables or measurable outcomes. And the grantee is required to meet those expectations of the grant monies that are being provided.
Can I ask another question? Is it ever the role of the committee to say, have staff organized so you can go out and see, say, the swim program, which...
Oh, site visits.
Site visits. So that the committee can kind of see something in action?
Yep.
Or is it pretty much paper function?
No, and we were, okay. With our last meeting, we spoke about that a little bit, too, regarding site visits. So with new, especially with new grantees, new programs, that sort of thing, committee is, because staff always arranges site visits, and then so the committee would be invited to join in on those as well.
Is that an open invitation for committee members to participate on the
Absolutely.
Site?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Very good.
And it's always a lot of fun to be present and see the
See it in action instead of just on paper. Yeah, it's helpful.
Luciano, to give you an example, Susan is here from the Mizell Senior Center.
You're going to have to speak louder.
Fine. Suzanne is here from the Mizell Senior Center. She's the director of the Matter of Balance.
Okay.
The district has funded that program, started up a pilot program, and now has funded its continuation. They set their outcomes and they set their goals. The grantee does that in conformance, hopefully with tied to our strategic plan in our focus areas. But their goal is, different goals to have seniors or anybody really take this course so they learn they're going to fall properly. They have their medication checked. They have home visits to make sure that they don't have throw rugs or dog toys around. They do a complete assessment. They do mental health assessments because sometimes they become very, very lonely and they become housebound and they won't come out because they're afraid of falling. So it's a really great program. It started out with just a few sites. They've blossomed, I want to say like over 100, 30.
There's 30 host sites.
30 host sites. And then it's a train the trainer program. So it just continues and evolves. So that is one example of a grant that we funded, goals, measurements, outcomes, and they always exceed their outcomes. I'll say that. They're very good grantee. So that's just an example.
And I noticed that you responded on the report about their status, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. We used to put the whole progress report in there, but now I take snippets of it and put it in that proposals under development sheet that we have in here. So it kind of gives you highlights of where they're at in their progress, whether on track or they're not on track. If they're not on track, what are some of the things they're doing to correct it? Mm-hmm. And then the final reports are always list five things that you would do differently. And it really has the grantee do a little insight and reflection. And if they do come back to the district for more funding, we look at those five things you would do differently and say, okay, maybe this is what we work on now to better improve or better outreach for your program.
This is a struggle I'm having, and I'm gonna be very frank. I'm used to reading grants and rating them on measurable structure, and I'm struggling to read summaries and then make a decision or recommendation. Don't get me wrong, I like the way your structure is. You guys do the work, and that's fine with me.
You've yet to see a full grant application, so reserve your comments on that until you see an actual full grant application, because what we're talking about here is a pretty extensive packet of detailed documentation, and you'll see that sort of thing, I believe, that you're talking about. And then what Donna's talking about right now are these are grants that are already in place, and so she's providing then updates on what is the progress, where are things at?
So I will see the application.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say, for example, the application from the Mizell Senior Center. Based on that, then if the summary report comes in, I should be able to put two and two together, correct?
Yes, so you would see the initial grant application that would be reviewed and essentially ultimately approved by the committee to recommend.
Again, I want to just reiterate, don't get me wrong, you guys continue doing the work, that's fine with me. I don't want to do it. But if you put me in a position to recommend, I want to be able to recommend with information.
And you will have that information.
Very good.
And we'll get to our process, our scoring process. It's on the agenda.
Right.
So, were any more questions about appointment?
I have a question that may be premature in this process, but when it says identify trends, et cetera, monitor implementation of the plan, strategic plan, I didn't see something in here, and that would be some kind of roadmap of when you take the different areas of the strategic plan, a kind of a listing, you know, of the item, of the grants that are under that item, in order to kind of see which areas are being funded, which areas are not. And then I would ask a question beyond that, and that is it the program committee's task to identify the, based on the strategic plan and the funding already, to identify the areas that should be funded?
Well, I know that.
I mean, do you understand the question?
Yeah, is that a board function?
Right.
Yeah.
I do know that there's a new law that was passed recently that elected board members cannot go out and solicit grant applications. But there's nothing wrong with going up to somebody, some organization, and handing them your card or your information and saying, this is where you can go to look to find how to apply for a grant. So we, you know, as grants come in, we rate them according to our priorities. We have in the past sent out an RFP about, you know, and we're going to get to that because we have a mental health initiative and a report coming. And do we do an RFP for the items that have been identified? You know, that we'll get to that discussion.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
I think partially.
And to your point, and then you can correct me if I didn't understand you, but I think what I heard you say was based on, you know, like our community focus areas, what grants have we done to support those different areas of our strategic plan?
Yeah.
And we do have some of those, and it's a good point. We don't have an actual report of that. We do have on our website where we have categorized our community areas. And so we do have the work that's been done under those.
Under those rubrics.
So, and, you know, and the two main ones that we've been working on mostly has been the homelessness and then the behavioral health and health access. So, you know, we're starting to do some work around, you know, the healthy eating, active living component. So, but certainly coming from this program committee would be probably some ideas going into, say, a new strategic plan, having worked with, you know, this whole process and the community and what might be perceived as community health needs that could then be, you know, giving some guidance to, because we do also have a strategic planning committee. So. So they kind of all can interact together. Yeah. Ultimately, it's the board that, you know, gives the final approval and acceptance of what the strategic plan is about, and ultimately reporting back to the board that we're being successful in meeting those.
And this can really be part of the strategic plan.
Yeah.
When we see the updates.
Yeah.
We will have a new strategic plan in 2020. The one we're currently working on is 3 years old.
Did that answer your question?
I think it did. I'm just looking for maybe at some point some kind of chart that says here's the strategic plan areas. Either this is the number of grants under each of those, and or what the dollar amount is. Kind of like a pie chart, or, you know, just some sense so that when we are processing reviews of grants, you know, staff or a member can say, okay, it fits into this area, we're doing very well in this area, or it's an area that, you know, needs more grants kind of thing. Just a, you know, a context picture that would be helpful at some point. I really appreciate the effort to put this book together because it's really helpful.
I have a question also.
Sure.
And this may be covered later, and it may have already been covered and I overlooked it, but you mentioned the stewardship and the interim reporting and the final reporting. And I'm just sort of interested how that is reported, if it's reported to the program committee, or is there follow-up to that, and what the ramifications of late reporting or no reporting is to future grants?
As I mentioned before, maybe you didn't hear me, but in the proposals under development, which is on page, in your packet, which is on page, starting on page 7, lists the letters of inquiry, but then it also lists the current proposed progress reports that have come in. Gives you kind of an overview of what the original approved amount was, what the status is, and whether they're on track or they're not in compliance or things need to be corrected. So, like I said, in the past, we did give the full progress report, full final reports, but we were asked to condense it. And so this is after reviewing it and going through it, doing my due diligence before I'm going to issue another check to make sure their progress report matches their budget, the receipts are in on time, that everything else is in on time, and then it's condensed sort of into this thing. But you're always more than welcome if you want to see the actual progress report and final report.
I think my question is more about an aggregate. Like, is there some kind of reporting that shows, like, of the reports due for the month of January, 25% of the interim reports are late, or 50% of the final reports have not been filed, like an aggregate reporting versus an individual reporting? Like,
it can be run, but I don't really see the purpose in it, because between Chris and I, we do our due diligence to make sure that, you know, because he's the one that sets up the payments, or I set up the payments and then say whether or not it's a go or not. I have to say our grantees are very, very compliant. We hardly have ever have anybody that's either out of compliance. If they haven't spent all their grant dollars, they're like Johnny on the spot sending it back. So we have a really good group of nonprofit organizations. It's not like.
And they're very responsive.
They're very responsive.
If they haven't met something, they're very responsive. They are fully aware that it could affect any future granting opportunities.
They're probably the location too, because it's like, since most of the things are within this area, it's probably easier in some ways to get reporting in. It's like one of the groups I work with is broader focus, and it's like that's a real issue because, you know, people don't do reports and they don't do final reports and they can't find them.
Right. We don't experience much of that.
No, if we do that, we either demand the money back, or we're going to, in the grant contract, we can do ask for a complete audit and look at their books.
Yeah.
So, I mean, being a government agency, we really are pretty strict about our dollars. You know, they have to do prevailing wage. They have to.
And we have had a couple of instances, you know, in the last 2 or 3 years, where we have had to, you know, be a little stronger with the grantee because they weren't meeting some sort of requirements. So it affected whether they got monies or not.
Yeah, and the program committee will hear about that.
Right.
Yeah, one other. Just an informational question. I hear opioid in the news constantly, programs and so forth. I haven't seen that word in the documentation that I've gone through, but do we have any focus on that, or is it assumed under other?
Under areas? Our behavior, access to primary care and behavioral health care. Behavioral health care includes mental health plus substance abuse.
Mm-hmm.
As Carol mentioned, and you'll see later on,
okay,
we are doing a behavioral health needs assessment,
okay,
to identify the gaps, what's needed, what's out there, what are
right,
the resources, so that the district and other community partners can then decide
where can we maybe move the needle? Where can we make a good impact with our funding and other people's funding? Because we can't do it alone. So, so that will come down through the months as our needs assessment comes stronger.
Great, thanks.
That's great. Good questions, everyone.
Absolutely.
Anybody else have any questions? So we can move on to process.
Okay. Yeah. So page 25 of the packet, grant mini grant policy. I think we've done a fairly good discussion about some of that here. But we're, you know, the overall purpose is to administer grant funds to assure responsible distribution of monies and to maximize the benefit of community members and fairness to grant recipients. So I think that kind of encapsulates what we've been talking about here, that we are working with public taxpayer dollars, and so we are the stewards of those funds to ensure that those monies are being used in a way that benefits our residents. And I won't go into too much detail in that actual policy process, but I think we could move to the flow chart and just kind of do a highlight of that on page 30 of the packet. And so this you can kind of see from a picture type of view, you know, how the actual process works. So without going into a lot of detail in it, so the letter of interest comes in from a potential grantee, and that could be from having worked with them before, or if there's some communication in the community, like Carol was saying, that, you know, happen to be in the community and talking to somebody, and it sounds like they might have something that makes sense for what our strategic plan is about and our mission. You can direct them to the district for a process how to start the consideration for a grant application. So so staff does the internal vetting process and getting the LOI and evaluating, go through the due diligence process where we go through a scoring, et cetera. And then it's brought to the program committee in the second column. So staff report and update and all the detail is there, as we were talking about, Luciano, that allows the committee to evaluate each grant application in detail and, you know, raise any kind of questions, any concerns of the grantee in this process. And from there, it may be sent back for the grantee to provide more information, clarify some things, bring back to the committee at a later date, and then ultimately, if the committee recommends to move forward to the board for their consideration for full approval, then we move to the third column, and the grant, ultimately, if it's approved, to be awarded. It'll be awarded, approved, or approved and awarded, and then it'll start the process of putting out the first round of funds. We don't give all the funds at first. It's set up on a payment schedule. So there's progress reports that we've been talking about that need to be developed and reported on each quarter or every 6 months, however the grant schedule is set up.
Chris?
Yes.
You mentioned it's grant software. What software are you using for that?
BlockBow. BlockBow, part of the Donor Perfect, Razor's Edge.
And we did go through a very extensive upgrade process over the last year or so. Mm-hmm. It's an online process now, cloud-based, and there's been extensive amount of work with staff and also with the BlockBow people that have been working with us to get that tailored to our specific needs and get the detail in there that we need to, you know, to run a very concise, good grant program. So moving on to page 34, this is the grant application scoring rubric. So these are the categories and the areas where staff will evaluate the grant application that comes in. So a scoring is provided, you know, whether it meets or exceeds expectations, meets expectations, or does not meet expectations at all. And so if it does provide, you know, more of a somewhat unbiased opinion in a sense, so that you're not just assuming that somebody likes a particular grantee and they're just going to give the grantee just because, it allows us to go through a very standard process to evaluate each grantee and the individual grant application itself.
And each grantee, when they're filling out their application, the grant application is based on the scoring, so they put that side by side so they can look and see, okay, I need 10 points on 20 points on executive summary, I better make that section tight on my application. So it's not like this is a surprise and we're scoring them on something that we don't know what they're scoring on. They have this available, and when they're doing their application, each question is tied to each one of these categories, scoring categories.
And they can come and get coaching from you and support, and you can say, we need more information in this area. So when you finally even come to committee, you're probably coming with recommendation to move forward. I mean, I'm assuming you're not going to bring a grant to committee that isn't
then
isn't
I'm not,
there.
I'm not doing my job.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Well, and there may be times, I mean, this committee experienced it last month where we had a potential grant application coming up, a grantee with some thoughts and ideas for a scope of work or a grant, and staff had some questions and concerns, and so we brought that before the committee for some discussion and then further direction whether we move forward with it to come forward with a full grant application or not. So but you're right, most of the times it'll be already vetted and a lot of the back work done by staff and then brought to the committee.
So we're not in a position most of the time that the budget's this, but there are this many grants, and that they could be a good quality, but some are being vetted out just because the budget isn't there, or does that happen?
I don't understand.
So say just for example, there are 5 grants coming forward, there's a $2 million budget, and these 5 grants add up to $3 million. So there's a need from the committee to really make a decision about, we just only have so much money.
If we needed that, we haven't really run into that.
Okay, that's what I mean.
Because
so you've managed that as staff before we
have gone over budget as well.
Okay.
So with the blessing of the board.
Okay, fine.
Right.
And so sometimes you send them forward regardless so the board can make that decision.
Right. And it may be if it's towards the end of the fiscal year where our budget is being, maxed out.
Yeah, you're
then we allow the committee and then also the board to determine whether they want to award it in this fiscal year.
Or the next. Move it into.
And
okay.
We've also, and the grantee a lot of times will just say, I'll wait till the next year. Instead of getting into the end by the end of June, your fiscal year starts July 1st. Can we submit our grant that would begin July 1st?
Yeah. Well, I think it's also important, especially vis-a-vis the discussion at the last committee meeting, that the grantees have to have measurable results.
Right.
The part of the process when the lift rise was if they wanted to fund research and data collections and salaries and
no deliverables.
You wouldn't know deliverables.
Yeah, you're looking for outcomes.
Right.
Right. I mean, it sounded like a really great program for development of low cost housing. But, at the end of the grant, we want to see low-cost housing.
Right.
And while we're on that, I was going to do a little update on that later, because the committee at that point directed staff, and it is part of the grant proposals, but the committee had directed for staff to come back, at a later date with a potential grant application. Staff met with the folks from Lift Arise, and we had continued discussion with our board members who are on the committee of staff's concerns about the director Roger was stating that there was not really any measurable outcomes defined. Just essentially spending dollars for research and, you know, data collections and things like that with without a real defined outcome for it. So Lift to Rise is going to come back with a redefined scope for a grant application, and that will most likely come forward at our September committee meeting.
So out of the 110 points in these different areas, has staff noticed any general trends in terms of which of these areas the grant applicants are most successful with, and which would be the weakest areas of generally?
Well, we've just implemented this just in the last few months.
Yeah,
so
it's very structured, and I appreciate that.
We don't have a long history yet. So to answer to your question regarding the grant, I don't think we have enough history on that. Any other questions regarding the scoring rubric?
I have a question.
Sure.
Difference between letter of interest application and grant. Is there any difference between that?
Yes. The letter of interest is just that. The letter of interest is just that. They're asking if they can apply for some funds for the district to cover a particular focus area, health focus area. We look at that, review it, we see how much money they're asking for, what is their project budget. We look at the project budget. For example, with a letter of interest, they have to have audited financial statements. We had a grantee that came in just now with a letter of interest and asked for $50,000 out of a $100,000 budget, but they did not have audited financials. So kicked it back and said, we need audited financials. You can apply for a mini grant for $5,000. You don't need audited financials for that. They said now they're in the process of getting audited financials. So once everything is complete, then we will generate what we call stage two, which is the application. So that's a full application that lists everything that's on there. What's your project budget? Who are you serving? What cities are you serving? What's your evaluation plan? What is your tracking abilities? Everything is listed. Once that gets approved, then that's a grant application when they generate stage two. That's the application, and then it goes to a contract.
In the spirit of fairness, how does staff handle, in my opinion, the reality of, say, grantee A that submits a grant to you folks, it's very high cotton grant, as opposed to grantee B, they have no experience writing grants, but they are a legitimate organization, have a legitimate concern, want to try to do a legitimate task to improve health care. How do you folks handle that?
That's a great question.
And we have had that happen.
Say that again?
We have had that happen. We have one organization that comes in. This organization cannot get their act together with their audited financials. They finally are going to get their audited financials, but they're still showing $27,000 in debt. So they have no board governance, no board structure, no fiduciary financial stability. In that respect, we tell them that these are all the things that you are lacking, or that you actually, and they have a wonderful mission. We then invite them to go to Regional Access Project Foundation's Center for Nonprofit Advancement. We will pay for an agency assessment. We will pay for them to get the things they need to get them into line to be able to receive district taxpayers' funds. So we just don't dump them out. We just, you know, we want to work with them. We want to make them a strong organization.
In all fairness.
And the stronger they are, then the more they can get a grant from us.
Well, and it's also significant that we've had a grant application from an organization that submitted a financial statement, an audited financial statement, but it had discrepancies. So it has to be clean.
It had management concerns, and we said, I'm sorry, but we cannot look at anything until you address these management concerns and you get it back in writing from the auditors that these have been addressed. to date, we haven't heard anything. Now and then, this organization will try again, where it's like, you haven't answered the audited questions. Mm-hmm. And plus, they're not in compliance with the IRS, this particular organization. Mm. They were supposed to submit 990s, and they haven't since 2002.
It's a pretty complex system for a novice organization to navigate, because it's public funds.
Yeah,
so you can't provide a gift of public funds.
Exactly.
The agency has to be able to implement and monitor and financially navigate, and it's very complex. I think it's wonderful that you guys give them direction to get some support and help them
become more sophisticated. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that was it.
And it's an accountability thing. It really is. Like Christine was just saying, we don't just give money out just to give money out. I mean, we're stewards of resident taxpayer dollars, and so we have to be very accountable to those funds and how they're spent. And if we don't, it's a problem. So, we will never bring forward to the committee something that, number one, doesn't have a viable nexus to the healthcare district's mission of providing access to healthcare for our residents. And we're making sure that all the T's are crossed, the I's are dotted, that we avoid any kind of problem that could be foreseeable in the use of those taxpayer funds.
Yeah. Plus, we utilize our legal counsel if we do have some concerns and questions.
And we're also audited by a CPA clerk year-end, so they go over our own finances with regard to
and our grants. They go over
our grants. Great.
Yes.
It's not an immediate concern, but taking the spirit of this chart, at some point it would be useful to see the tracking process of the group once a grant has been granted. So in other words, kind of a continuation of the chart.
Well, that's the progress reports that we report on, progress and final reports.
No, I understand that, but some kind of, again, something similar to this, covering the progress and that you were just talking about, the process that you use to track a grant once it's been given.
Okay. It's what we set up requirements.
No,
box
I understand that, but yeah. A box, a chart like this.
It's more reporting, is what you're saying. Right? It becomes more reporting than a Gantt chart.
Do you mean like when the LOI is received, when it moves on to the next phase?
No,
he's talking about once
after the grant.
Given the grant. Okay.
Well, the only boxes I would add would be progress reports and final reports.
Good. Okay.
That's all. I mean,
is it annual?
It's based on however each grant is set up, the schedule wise, because some grants are set up with 6 month progress reports, some are quarterly progress reports, depending on the duration of the grant.
I have a question. What assurances do you have that the applications are grants versus donations, or how do you? Like, do you sometimes get grants that are structured more like donations versus identifiable to a specific action?
We don't do donations. So
if it's like to build something, there's going to be a specific something that's
has
built.
Has to be a specific purpose.
If it's going to be a scholarship, it's a specific person receiving an item. But it's not like a donation to the organization.
Correct.
And typically, the district does not operate programs. We pay organizations to operate programs. I think the only program that we operate right now is our Ready, Set, Swim.
Right, so SWIM and Nutrition Education and Obesity.
And at some point, there's talk about spinning that off into its own nonprofit. But we've had history of doing that too. For instance, HARP was once a district under the district. Umbrella.
Foundation.
Smile Foundation.
Smile Factory.
Smile
Desert
Foundation.
Health Car. Suzanne Jackson Breast Cancer Fund. They've all been spun off.
So we've done, I believe.
Survived.
Yeah, the goal is to spin them off. We prefer to have nonprofits in the valley, and now it's the entire valley, to provide the services and staff involved to make sure that our funds. Our grant budget per year is usually about $4 million.
Yeah, $3.5 million to $4 million.
Depending what we get the board to approve. And we have gone over budget. And last month, the board approved our $1 million addition to the homeless initiative because we have the funds available.
And that was recommended from this committee to the board, was the full board approved. So with that grant, we exceeded our grant budget for the fiscal year by about $60,000. So we utilized all of our grant budget for prior fiscal year.
And then that would be what component of like the district budget? Like if you say $3.5 million, is that a small portion of the district or is that a large portion of the district revenues?
Almost half.
Yeah, so like that.
I was just curious. It's like, not that it's particularly related to programming.
Well, but it's a sensitive subject because I always ask what because you work with a nonprofit organization, you say what percentage is your overhead?
Right, that's what I was asking.
Yeah.
Like, would you fund yourself?
Yeah. Well, and then I asked a friend about how to determine overhead costs, and every organization does it differently. So there's no answer here.
No,
overhead is a general term.
I mean, exactly.
There's operating overhead that, the staff and, all of that. But then there's overhead that is like depreciation or,
right.
We have, not getting details, but we have it's called a retirement protection plan. So we have, former employees of when the healthcare district operated the hospital that are now employees of Tenet that are still working at Desert Regional, that the district maintains a retirement program.
So it's very unique.
Yeah. So there's overhead expenses that are associated with that figure in the total overhead number, but it's not an operational.
Is the percentage of funds going out increasing or decreasing?
We've maintained about $3.5 to $4 million over the last several years.
We get in about $6 million in property tax.
And those property taxes aren't increasing, but our area has increased that we can serve. So that was
No. Okay, so
that's
a very interesting comment.
Here comes the
we could go on all day with this topic, but just in a nutshell,
yep.
The current property taxes are coming from what would have been the residents of
right.
the former district.
Right.
That has actually increased some because our real estate values have increased. So it's increased some this year.
Some.
Less, yeah, moderately.
It went down a lot too during the recession.
Right. Yeah, so it's subject to the economy.
Right.
To your point with the expansion and doubling the service essentially,
right.
area essentially, that did not come with funding source.
That's what I understand.
So there is no additional property taxes or funding source that comes along
yeah.
with that.
And hence kind of my question about, I'm assuming you may have more, have staff may get more people coming to you with grant opportunities. Because it's a bigger area.
Right.
It's twice the area, but the funds are the same.
Correct.
So the challenges Correct. Are...
Yeah, for example, Mizell, they do workshops, Matter Balance workshops,
right.
west east of Cook Street. And
right.
ask if there was any funding to help
right.
with those. It's kind of a double-edged sword.
It is.
We like them to leverage dollars, so that's very nice that they can leverage dollars, but yet then there's not enough in that foundation
right.
pot to...
Yeah, the pot didn't increase.
So the district currently has $300,000 a year that is committed to the expanded area for grant funding, but we need more.
Which is not, no kidding.
Is it true though that when you look at the taxes that are paid by the original area, that the property owner really pays no more
because it's just that the county or somebody reverts that funds back. So it's not like that.
It's the same 1%.
Right. So it really is just a matter of, I mean, they would, if you lived in the service area or in the new service area, you're paying the same taxes. It's just what the county reverts back to you, right?
Right, but it didn't change that, so the taxpayers...
And they're not going to change it, or they're
correct.
And also, look at the argument that the people in east of Cook Street pay the same property tax dollar-wise as the people in West.
Look, that's what I'm saying.
And so there's no 1% for the people in East County.
Right.
And so I ask you to lobby your supervisors to give us another 1%. Good luck.
No. Mm-hmm. But it's not,
but those
like
dollars are going to another special district. So
but it's not as if if I live in Palm Springs, then I'm paying more in taxes, and now my dollars are providing services to the new area. That's not really a true statement.
And that's not
a true statement. Because it's like, really, I'm paying the same dollars as my buddy in Indio. It's just that the county is paying this portion.
What is county disbursement?
It's just that what portion of what were your taxpayer dollars were being apportioned to the old district boundaries now is being spread across.
So will that $300,000 to the new service area be reviewed every year, or is it pretty stagnant?
Well, I mean, if that was brand new this last year, so...
It was unrestricted funds that they took.
Yeah, so the $300,000, that's what was defined as, it's not property taxpayer dollars, it's unrestricted funds that were in our foundation. So that's what's committed to the expanded area right now.
For 10 years.
For 20 years.
For 20.
And that's a commitment. I mean, it's something that certainly can be revisited by any board of directors and discussed, you know, annually as to what they want to do.
And it's also the opportunity, because it is with the foundation, that we as foundation staff, wearing a foundation hat, could go out and fundraise and write grants to other foundations to bring those dollars in and increase that pot. If those other foundations, say, had the same interest that we did, like solving homelessness in Coachella or whatever, we could do like a partnership, funding partnerships.
Well, with the homeless initiative, that's sort of what you're doing in a way. I mean,
And the district board foundation did approve a dollar for dollar match to $50,000 for that one.
And that's matching public donations, so individuals, businesses that want to contribute to a fund that was set up for a summer homeless survival fund. So it's just for the summer to, you've probably heard about the cooling centers that are being open now for 24 hours, 7 days a week in Cathedral City, Palm Springs, and other hot springs. And so there's a couple of different sources of funds there that are supporting that. The county did provide some funds, $200,000 towards that operational cost. And like Carol was saying, the district kind of a challenge match to the public too. At this point, there's been about $12,000 that's come in from the public. And so the foundation will be matching that to support the operations of those cooling centers.
But the bottom line is that we're going to have a challenge about how we're going to fund these county programs.
Yeah. And perception.
And perception, yeah. So that I'm looking forward to all of us trying to figure that out.
And while we're on the grant making, and I'll just pass these out, and you can look at them at your leisure if you have any questions. But I did do a history of the district health, Desert Healthcare District grant making from 1999 to 2019. So it's compiled from board reports, staff reports, and minutes and stuff. So it's
that would be great.
We'd like to give you some kind of history and give you an example of how we're still always on the same track, even 20 years ago.
I know. I was at a State of the City address in Desert Hot Springs in the community center, and I looked up on the wall and it's on the side. It says Desert Healthcare District Foundation building.
Wow.
Yeah.
Where is it?
It's at the center there,
the,
you know, where the pool is.
Oh, Desert Hot Springs. Yeah, the Health and Wellness Center.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we gave $5 million worth of
it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
way it's needed.
That's true.
Okay, any other questions? We'll move on.
Did you get one?
Yeah, I gave one.
Thank you so much. Good. Super.
Okay, so moving on to page 38, conflict of interest code. Okay, so with our conflict of interest code, the district defines each designated position, so on page 39, and what disclosure categories of Form 700 need to be completed. So towards the bottom of that designation, there's the committee members, so program and finance committees. Disclosure category 5 is what's required to be completed for the Form 700. Then if you go to page 40, you'll see category 5 is all investments. And if you have page 41 right next to it, which is the cover page for Form 700, so as we match up there, so category 5, all investments in business positions and business entities. So you would have to do Schedule A1 and Schedule A2. And then sources of income, Schedule C, including gifts, loans, travel payments. So that also includes Schedule D and E.
So that's something we're filling out now, right?
That's the Form 700 that you would need to complete.
It does need to be done immediately.
It doesn't have to be done this day, but we would like to get it.
I've looked at this, and it's like, I'll be honest, I'm sort of like at a total loss.
Really what you have to look at is, are you investing in something, someplace that is a conflict with what your purpose is with the district?
So if it's not a conflict, you don't disclose it.
Yeah. No, there's a box that says no, none on number four.
It's easy.
So if nothing applies to any of those forms, then you can complete the first page that
Schedule 4.
It's staff
available. Okay, because I may need help.
By all means, give a call, stop by the office. We can help individually.
Okay. Because I'm just having trouble with what is disposable and what's not disposable. And I have no relationship with the district, so it's I could just put none at the top, I think. But then when I read the questions, then I'm asking myself if it's really asking for something different.
So one good example is if you're receiving, say, a free ticket to, you know, a fundraiser or something for a grantee. So perception-wise could be I received a ticket to go to some $200 function. Could I be biased in my decision whether that grantee receives a grant or not? If I have that potential, then that's something that should be reported.
I don't ever get invited to anything, so I don't even have that problem.
But moving forward, you could be. You're on the program committee, and you're part of approving $4 million worth of grants. You might be surprised.
Right.
And you need to be a little careful about public perception. That's right. Yeah, and accepting those. And if you do, you just have to disclose, right?
Correct.
You have to disclose.
Yeah, so like for that kind of example, I mean, it's anything over $50 individually. But then also if you have multiple items that are under $50 that exceed, like it's $470 this year in aggregate, that would also need to be reported. So, I mean, it isn't a very clean and cut and dry kind of a deal. So you really have to analyze on the error of conservancy.
So you don't put your residence, your trust funds, anything like that on there, only if there's a relationship.
Anything like that.
I'm feeling better.
Yeah. For a lot of people, there is not going to be anything to report, but just recognize that you are on a committee with public dollars that are being decisions made on, that it is an important component.
Right.
So if there's any specific questions regarding Form 700, you know, contact me or Andrea. And we'll help you out, okay?
Who do we contact?
Me or Andrea.
Okay.
And there are places on the web that you can get training and complete it as well.
Would it be good if you could possibly have it by at least by next week, no later, next week, at least by, you know, by Monday, they get to the weekend?
And Chris, you wouldn't be required to do this at this point.
No, as an alternate.
Correct.
You can take that with you and.
All right, any other high level?
This is somewhat related to conflict of interest. Is this committee covered in the Brown Act?
It is.
Now, I didn't, it might be helpful for people who haven't worked for government to have something in here that says how we, I mean, we can't really communicate with each other, for example, outside of this public forum. And there are a number of acts that have consequences, and that might be as part of this packet. Would be, I think there's a standard form you can just get, it spells it all out.
I can email the manual to you.
Yeah, but I just think people need to, who haven't served on this, we need to.
That's a great idea.
15?
Yep. Okay, so moving on. What do we provided in here too, mostly for information, for reference. So page 64 is our strategic plan. We've been talking, you know, about the priorities and the focus areas. So, you know, the focus areas that we have are homelessness, primary care, behavioral health access, healthy eating, active living, and then a fourth one, which is kind of a, I mean, it's an important one, but we really don't do grant funding in that focus area, which is quality, safety, accountability, and transparency. We just want to make sure that our district is above board on everything that we do, that we're transparent, that we're you know, not in conflict with any issues at all, and we're as the owner of the hospital, Desert Regional Medical Center, we are committed to overseeing safety with the hospital, so we do quarterly inspections there. There's a separate committee that's involved with that, so kind of an oversight kind of a function. Also included on page 69 is our LAFCO application plan services. So we included this, but we just felt that it was kind of good information for different things, but it also includes in there some potential funding sources, and just a little history on this. When the district was applying to expand the district boundaries, we had to go through an extensive process with LAFCO, the Local Agency Formation Commission, and a very extensive application process, a review, the county supervisors were involved. There were several challenges in getting that initiative to the ballot. And so part of that was needing a funding source. Well, we didn't have a funding source. So there was, you know, there was proposed options in here for funding sources. So these are some potential areas that we can potentially look to. Some of them are not very viable. So I'm looking at page 83. 84, and then it goes into more detail on the following pages, so you can read through those. But there's, you know, there's tax related issues, and, you know, there could be a parcel tax, and that was actually considered for a while with the board to initiate a measure on the ballot for a parcel tax for the residents of the expanded area, which would mean increasing their current property taxes from what they currently are, but is even with everybody across the district. And that would have been a challenge and a problem. I'm sure those residents wouldn't want to pay more than what the West Valley residents are paying. So
yeah, actually we did a focus group, and the focus group asked that question, and the majority of the people said, if, you know, if the district expanded to East County and such services were offered, the majority of people said they would be in favor of parcel tax.
Yeah, I think at that level, but maybe, you know, who knows
when it comes back to the ballot. But still, that was interesting.
Carol, I'm sorry I couldn't hear. In what situation would they be?
We had a focus group. Well, it was, I think the question was if we offered X services in East Valley, like maybe a new hospital or.
I was going to say, a new hospital, I bet you'd get a yes.
And so those are, that's a good point, because those are some of the areas where the property taxpayer dollars can be used for. I mean, we've been talking mostly about grant funding to nonprofit organizations and to some programs that we're doing, but those property taxpayer dollars can be utilized to build health care related facilities. So clinics, hospitals, so it's not specifically restricted just to grant funding. So
there we go.
So any questions or anything? Obviously, if you don't have any here today, feel free to contact me. Happy to help you out. Andrea's fairly knowledgeable with most of it as well, and Donna's very knowledgeable on the grant operation part of it. Any questions, concerns?
Great, thank you so much, Stan.
Yeah, thank you.
Moving on to committee member comments. We were going to try and give you a very brief overview of the Behavioral Health Initiative that's in process. We received preliminary reports on two studies, we said?
Yes, we received reports on focus on
focus groups, right?
Focus groups, key stakeholders, and service providers.
Service providers.
Right. So I do have a scope of the work if you want to just take this with you and look at it. They are on track, and they are expecting to have a final report for us in August.
August 15th. For publication in September.
Yeah. And then there's going to be a learning summit. A convening in September sometime, and what we're looking at, hoping that we can tie that into where the assessment will be given out publicly. We're hoping to tie that into Supervisor Perez's Green Ribbon Committee, where he's already had two or three already. He has convened high-end stakeholders and service providers that we're looking at as how hopefully that this needs assessment will identify the needs, the gaps, what's there, what's not there, the resources that are needed. And with this convener of these high-level groups, hospitals, other types of organizations, that we can look at it as a true collective impact model. And where Supervisor Perez can say, okay, here's some gaps over here. Who wants to take this piece and try and make it happen? Who wants to take this piece over here and try and make it happen? And as a group, we make it happen. Behavior health, mental health, and substance abuse. And that's
very helpful, thank you.
And as these reports, some of them are being revised, and this one we haven't even looked at yet, so but as they slowly get revised and accepted and presented to the board, then we'll be making these public as well on our website.
I have a question about, like, these handouts we can take with us.
Of course.
Okay, the material that's in the books, we leave each time, or we can take with us?
You can take with it, but if you could leave the binders, that way each
leave the binders and take the material.
Well, the material that's in there is from today's meeting. The other one is all of the overview of the program committee.
Yeah. So we can keep this.
You can take that, so, yes.
Okay. So this is the one I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, so the one with the orientation package, and yes, please take that.
I was not sure. My first impression was we had to leave everything.
No, I guess.
Not on the hospital going forward.
So yeah, take that if you leave the meeting.
Thanks, Brian.
Well, no, it's like I wanted to take it, but I wasn't going to take it because I thought we had to leave. I'm a real person.
We're in process on the homeless initiative. You heard that we have a public appeal for the cooling centers, and maybe at some point in time we could get a report from
Greg
Rodriguez. Greg Rodriguez. Maybe we get a report from Greg Rodriguez. in terms of what's happening there and how they work together.
He is working with our summer intern. She's going to help him map all the resources, whether or not it's creating a spreadsheet and or a GIS map. So she's working with Greg on that. Mm-hmm. A lot of resources.
That's super. Yeah.
And Greg always gives us monthly updates on our board meetings as well. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, we're all welcome to come to board meetings.
Keeping the board very informed. And so you're welcome to be there. Also check out the minutes from those board meetings. Andrea does a great job of capturing them.
And we do record them.
Yeah.
As a government entity, we record our meetings.
So anytime if you're, want to hear something from the audio, those are uploaded to the website.
You can't sleep at night. Just turn on the website.
Background noise.
Yeah. I'm hoping at some point in time we can do audio and video.
We're working on that, but one of the issues is that we don't have our meetings in one central location, so video has to be linked to some type of sound system and that type of thing. Mm-hmm.
You can transmit live on Facebook.
Okay. I'll talk to Will about that.
Okay, great. Any more discussion?
One
question.
So I see that we're not going to be meeting until September, which is fine. Question, and I really appreciate this session that would fill us in with what we're doing. Are there any things we should be specifically thinking about between now and the September meeting in terms of where we're going as a committee that you might need our help specifically in thinking about?
I can't think of anything specific. We will. We anticipate bringing some full grant applications to the September meeting. We will have our new CEO, Conrado Barziga, who will be starting July 31st, so he will be available for our September meetings going forward. And we certainly look forward to Conrado joining the team and being very involved in participating with the mission of the district. So I can't think of anything specific between now and then for the committee, but certainly if you have any thoughts or feedback, don't hesitate to let us know.
And I'm sure we'll be sharing information as it comes in.
Right. So regarding the month of August is dark with regard to all committee and board of directors. So Alan, you have a comment?
Is there some aspect of the district that's, how do I say it, keeping an eye on the potential dissolution of the Affordable Health Care Act?
Oh, that's how that will accomplishment.
And how that will, because I remember when that came into effect, it totally solved a lot of problems in the Gatillo Valley. And the district could spend money on other things, matching people that.
We have a community health analyst that is tracking a lot of Senate assembly bills, and that is one of them as well. Mm-hmm. And we do have a lot of community organizations like Alianza and other community organizations that would be very effective are also tracking that. So that California partnership that's a real advocate of all that's going on. So I believe Supervisor Perez's office as well. But yes, we're still tracking too, so if there's any kinds of information.
Okay. Well, thank you. I have a plane catch.